Hello, good people, and welcome to this week's broadcast of the Alchemy of Light Show. I am Jamil Graham, your host, and the Alchemy of Light Show is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we think and feel, because everything begins with a feeling. And today we're broadcasting on Saturday, the 29th day of the fifth lunation in the year of healing and gratitude, or 19 May 2012. And we are broadcasting from bbsradio.com. And today's show is a celebration of stillness and the beauty of the voice within as expressed from the voice of the flute. And we have an extraordinary flutist with us, somebody who has been on the journey of sharing and cultivating and knowing, developing this communion, true communion with the flute since prior to 1996. However, his first recordings were 1996. And I would like to welcome Mr. Gary Stratsos.
Hello, welcome everyone. Hi, how are you today?
We are fantastic, and we are so lucky to have you with us, Gary. Please share with the listeners a little bit of your story and just to familiarize themselves with your journey into the flute and how the flute became your voice and the connection to the music.
Well, I'll give it to you real quick because it is kind of a traversing the sonic landscape of our time, but way back in 1973, oh my, way back then I was a young lad, and I was in the first row of a concert for a very unique collection of souls that had made a name for themselves in London at the Marquee Club, England. And there was a gentleman by the name of Ian Anderson, who's the great songwriter, guitarist, vocalist, and extraordinary flutist himself in the great band called Jethro Tull. And everybody thought Ian Anderson was Jethro Tull, but he's really Ian Anderson from Scotland. And I was quite taken by this man's action on the flute. So after the concert, I went and bought a flute in a pawn shop in Grand Rapids, Michigan for $30, and I began to teach myself how to play the instrument on my own. And from that journey, I crisscrossed into American jazz and Afro-Cuban flute music, and then it brought me up to 1994, and I found my way to the Great Plains of North Dakota, and I was very fortunate and honored to better understand the music of the American Indian people and how traditional vocal love songs were transposed to monolithic instruments called American Indian flutes, because it was still just starting to gain recognition, at least here in present-day North America, and I embarked on a journey through the American Indian flute world and my recording career, and then starting to revisit some of the music. You had mentioned Oru, a Nigerian Yoruban chant record for flute. So basically, I kind of found myself studying in the disciplines of American Indian flute music, Afro-Cuban and American jazz, a little bit of the British folk pop scene in the late 60s, and also the Zen meditation music of the great Paul Horn, who's a mentor of mine. He's been a great inspiration to me, and starting to find the stillness, as you would said earlier, in my worldly flute music. And now I sit here today still searching for some of the sounds that I'm trying to create.
So your flute exploration began in the communion and the learning with the Native Americans, with the indigenous people.
Well, my original flute was self-teaching myself how to play a concert flute. I should have mentioned there.
Oh, right.
And it was inspired by the great flutist Ian Anderson back in the early 70s. But my real contribution, I feel, in fact, someone asked me yesterday what they thought my contribution to the world of flutes was, and not only just playing the music, but what were the stories that were tied to the music, and what are some of the things you can bring to young people today to inspire them to maybe look into that world. And I, like I said, I've been very fortunate to have worked with traditional American Indian artists and culture bearers to better understand their music and to play their instruments.
Hmm. Will you share with us a bit more about that in the voice of the indigenous people, where, you know, we who are taught as children, we are Americans and all that. I mean, I think it's pretty well known that our story is not complete and extremely one-sided. And those of us who do care about truth in the song, truth in the history, to not only rectify our own peace of mind of the ground we're walking on, but also the truth that we might be passing on to our children. I mean, the indigenous people were great carriers of tradition without words, in written form. Their method of transferring information was through song and story. And in my understanding and what I, and my studies have shown me, very much more in tune with the mystery and the engagement of the wonder of life, not to romanticize them at all. I find that that's almost as disrespectful as not telling the true story, you know, of how this land was conquered and the genocide of the indigenous peoples and their cultures. I feel like there really is room for a lot of truth-telling, and the story in music and song, it seems to me one of the gentler ways that it can be communicated, because it allows one's heart to go with the music. And well, share with us, please, a bit about how you learn from the music. And one thing that I have noticed, your most recent CD, the Remembering the Songs, Music Traditions from the Zuni, Navajo, and the Salish Tribes, there are three tribes featured, but a whole handful of interesting flutes and mud whistles and these various things. Will you share with us a little bit about how the indigenous people taught and share their music and their creation of it?
Well, first you have to understand that, as I like to say, in this country, for people outside the discipline or their communities, it's a recent awareness or revitalization of Julie Cajun, who was kind enough to produce and ask me to do Remembering the Songs project about some of my friends in the Southwest and some of the songs that I've carried through the last 15 years. These songs weren't really composed. They came through the spirit world to certain individuals, and they've been passed down through families over time. And for me, I appreciate what you said about it's easy to romanticize, and it's easy to, it is disrespectful in a lot of ways. We tend sometimes to patronize the spirit of the American Indian people, when the reality is that they have a way of engaging us without saying a lot. So they like to sit back and listen. And it took me a long time to start to understand that, and it took me a long time to really understand the importance of these songs from the individuals that I learned them from. And just now, in fact, this latest project, Remembering the Songs, has given me a unique insight on the power of song and stories like you spoke of, and also the deep commitment that one has to carry the songs in a good way. Julie was here in Seattle 2 weeks ago, and she thanked me for taking care of the old songs. And no one's ever really said that to me before, and that doesn't mean that I sit in a lofty position. It just means that I took a lot of time to learn how to play the instrument from my own flute background on Western flutes. And I was fortunate to meet people that were willing to share some of these songs in a good way. So I have an obligation to continue to play what songs I know in a good way. And I think it tends to give some kind of a respect that, you know, I like to tell people that some of these American Indian love songs that I play have as much validity as a great jazz standard, like some, maybe the great Duke Ellington would have wrote back in the 30s. And I think that since we do tend to romanticize the music and the people, at least as it went through the recording industry the last 30 years, now we're seeing a shift into honesty and education and a different approach to presenting the work in a dignified fashion.
That's a tremendous relief. And indeed, you, as one who has reverence for the music, which comes through so clearly in your recordings. And I think anybody who visited your website, Gary Stroutsos, GaryStroutsos.com, and just looked at the discography page and just a glance at the amazing artists and people who have contacted you and people you have worked beside, it really shows you. And my personal observation, I would suggest this shows to me your reverence and your ability to really be present in many different peoples and environments, and to really share in the soul of something requires a sensitivity to really be able to listen. And I just want to commend that you for that. In my perception, that is what in your music shows to me, that you have learned to listen. what a gift that is, you know?
I appreciate that. You have to remember that, again, I was very fortunate, not only through the world of a mysterious hidden world called American Indian Reservation still, but also American jazz artists, Cuban artists, some of the artists that come from the Zen world and Asia. You know, I've just been a seeker of these innovative people that I've listened to and studied their music, had opportunities to meet over my career, that really the greatest gift for me is just the very fact that I got a glimpse of some of this great work and people. And I think that inspires me still today to try to, you know, like I'm a torchbearer, you know, I kind of carry the torch. I'm like a world, I guess I never thought of that before, but just a world flutist torchbearer. Not, hey, I'm the greatest player and I know all these disciplines. No, that I can talk to young people and say, check this out. These are some people that came through before me that are no longer with us. But look what they've been able, to bring to the world. And a lot of this music is lost. I mean, you have to really understand and be able to dig into it to even know where it exists at all. Especially the American Indian music. I mean, that is, I feel that now is never a better time to bring some of the traditional songs alive. There's really not a lot of people, Indian or non-Indian, so you know, that really have a big interest in the traditional songs. You might find that hard to believe, but it's the real truth. Since we're speaking about the truth today, there's not a lot of people that want to take the time to do the work or even maybe have some of the opportunities again, right, that I had, because a lot of people say, well, how did you do that? And how come I can't do that? How can I do that? Well, it's very complex, right? It's just like you're weaving the strands through personalities and different people, and you're journeying, and, you know, you're kind of like a sound traveler. You know, that's why the great Paul Horn has such great opportunities to record in the Taj Mahal or in the cathedrals in Russia or in the Great Pyramid. It was a time and a place that this great flute artist named Paul Horn had. He captured the imagination of people, and he told me once, you know, you need to let people hear your soul. That's what you need to do. And, you know, that's one of the greatest things anyone's ever told me, because that's that's really a hard thing to do for a lot of art. It's just been great for me to not take advantage also of some of these opportunities and try to turn them into a real profitable situation, because that reverence is there, and it came early on through jazz and Cuban artists, and it carried through to the American Indian. It's all kind of tied together, if you understand what I mean by that.
I absolutely do. And is it fair to say, in your knowledge of the indigenous people, that in a way I experience the culture, if it's really broadly generalizes, is the weaving of an inner and outer world much more fluidly than our modern world really allows? Our modern world is so busy and you know, it's like we stay too busy to feel. Mm-hmm. We're in the
earning. You can't touch anything. It's like a great Lakota man who was a descendant of the great chief Sitting Bull, Tatanka Iokate, said, it's risky to venture in and better understand a culture, not your own. But once accepted, it has a way of explaining itself, but how does one get into these situations without having vision and fortitude, passion? You know, I think a lot of the, you know, these are just people. You're like Julio. I said, hey, we're just people too, Gary. I said, I understand that. You know, don't mythicize us too much, make us mythical. It's like what she likes to say is, you took the time to come to see us, and you showed that respect, and we found you interesting, and we decided to let you be a little part of our world. But I will never be a tribal member, right? I never change my name. You notice on my record that it's still a Greek, Italian, Lebanese guy from Barrie, Vermont, back there in New England. So I have an obligation, because I came through a little different. And I know a lot of people that have a lot of dignity and respect. So I have to, not necessarily be careful, but you understand that I have to carry myself in a certain way. Especially dealing with things Indian, American Indian.
Yeah, I fully respect that. And I feel like, as you are suggesting, this is a really good time for the songs to be brought out. I feel like in this time, the psyche, the entire soul of anything calling itself American is shaking, because I really believe that the fact that we've been lied to and do not know our true history is creating a huge source of unrest in all of us, in the soul politic, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're living in a lie and you know it, You something in you is shaking, and this part of our journey as the collective human species is bringing to light everything. Nothing will escape this time. I really feel this. This is our great time of healing and remembering. And the indigenous cultures, wherever you find yourselves in it, regardless of whatever it means to you, the bottom line is that we don't know our story. Right? We don't know our story.
Some we were do. Just... I mean, not everyone doesn't know their story, but you're right. We do have, I meet a lot of lost souls that are searching, and a lot of these lost souls have tried to tie their star to the American Indian world, and that's mm-hmm. not in the best interest of those people.
Right.
You know, they're not real big on that. You know, without getting into a big political statement here, it's like Crazy Horse said in a poem I had on one of my records you don't have called The Native Heart, the songs will return upon this earth, the songs will return. So maybe the music, the stories, there's healing, right? The healing tones will, you know, emanate. You know, what kind, and that's what I try to do with my flute music. I try to put the spiritual the best that I can inside the music. But remember, I came up through other spirit walkers, great jazz musicians that had a way of, their voices were so powerful because of the struggles and the things that were going on. Right, with African American people, you know, when jazz was very prevalent in the 50s and early 60s. And I carried through a lot of that, I think, into the way I try to play American Indian flutes.
Well, there, and then you were into the Cuban music that your disc, Oru, The Natural Order, is a really lovely compilation of the music that are to the different orishas. Will you share with us a little bit about that, and then we can perhaps share a track with the listeners?
Okay, that's great. That might be one of my most powerful pieces of work just because of the nature of the music, the Nigerian Yoruban chants. And my friend Danilo Lozano, a great Cuban flutist and music professor at Whittier College in Los Angeles, asked me to take American Indian flutes and some Chinese flutes and learn the sacred chants in a melodic way, not necessarily just in the context of melody and flutes versus drumming and chanting. So it took me 2 years to try to learn the chants from a famous group in Cuba called the Los Miniquitos de Matanzas. And I'm not part of the Bata Yoruban religion, but Lázaro Galarraga, who sings on the record, blessed that project and made sure that everything was, no pun intended, in order. See, Oru means the natural order, meaning the order of the chants. And the orishas, they all had to be done in order. So it was really quite a project for me. And in a lot of ways, to be honest, I think it scared a lot of folks that they put it in, you know, instrumental. You know, at that time when it came out, they tried to put it in the meditation market, right? And I guess for lack of better terms, the New Age arena. And it wasn't quite... Folks in the New Age music field weren't ready for Oru, the natural order. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Well, maybe they're ready now. You never know.
Well, maybe you can play it now, and we'll see. Maybe someone will call in.
Yeah, tell us if it's working for them or not.
Yeah, is this working for you?
Are we New Agey enough now that we can listen to?
Yeah, we're New Agey enough now that we can go for it. I'll be interested to see which track you pick. See, so I'm waiting here. I'm excited.
Well, I actually picked the first one in the natural order because the guardian of the crossroads and to open the gate. This is one of my favorite compilations of the ones you sent me. I really, really, really appreciate this entire disc, and I find it actually hard to listen to one at a time. This is one that I noticed I must sit and listen to throughout. So we will start with the first one, Elegua, and we will begin that song now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that brings back some memories.
How long ago was that recording?
10 years.
Hmm.
But well, the whole concept with the percussion, the exotic percussion, and emulates the different Orishas. Those guys are really serious guys that really understood. They weren't just kind of banging around on drums. They had a real vision and direction. And you won't really hear the native flute really played in that context, probably on any other recording, probably than that, because no one has really dove into that arena.
Mm-hmm. It's a very creative project. I'm familiar a bit with the Santeria and the Orishas, and I was very excited to see what you did with it, and it's really brilliant. It's extremely creative musically. Any true music appreciator, I can't imagine, wouldn't find a value in this.
Well, we're thinking of re-releasing it and doing some different stuff. Actually, since you have such an interest, as a gift from me, I'll make sure I have your address. I would like to gift you, I have a bunch of copies of it, so I'm going to put a little package together for you, and you can maybe hand some out to some people that you might think have interest in that as a gift from me for Oru, the Natural Order.
Well, thank you. I do know people who I would love to pass it on to.
I would do that for you.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And share with us a little about your experience with Paul Horn. He is somebody else that I encountered 20-odd years ago, and really one of his CDs, and I don't remember, it wasn't even a CD back then, it was something recorded that somehow dominated my listening life for almost a year, and I had to. It was almost like the goddess said, "Jamil, you are going to sit here and listen to this of Paul Horn." And all I knew was Paul Horn, and that it was recorded in a forest.
Well, and he has a lot of recordings that on a series he calls Inside, but the real, just real briefly, he was a brilliant jazz artist that played various horns other than the flute, and was a composer, and had a very lucrative studio career in Los Angeles in the late 50s when jazz was really popping in Los Angeles. He was originally from New York, and he went to Oberlin Conservatory, a very trained, gifted classical and jazz musician. But when Transcendental Meditation started to take hold, when the Beatles went to India in 1967, he had already been the year before as a student, because he's a practitioner of the Maharaji, the whole Transcendental Meditation world. And he went back again, and he was there when the Beatles were there, and Mike Love from the Beach Boys and Donovan. In fact, he toured twice with Donovan on two United States tours, and he found himself playing his flute in places, like I said, the Taj Mahal was the famous recording in 1968 inside the Taj Mahal. And my conversations with him just recently over the last few years about him and his work and me playing solo concerts, he's just been very supportive of what I'm doing, and he wanted me to be real conscious of sharing these things with the kids. He's real, you know, he's retired now, but he just actually put a collection record out on Sounds True Music. It's like not a greatest hits, but his wife put together some of the tracks that she really liked. For the stillness, I forgot that name, the stillness, I can't remember the title, but you're just talking about someone that was very innovative, that came out of a jazz career that gave it all up in Hollywood and went into a whole nother world. So that's kind of my Paul Horn connection. And I always talk about him, and I don't think I sent you a copy of Shadows of Time. But he gave me permission to record. When I send you the Uhuru package, I'll put that record in. And I did a piece that he recorded called Meditations that he gave me permission to record in his style. Because a lot of young kids don't know who he is. You know, you've got to be a little older to remember Paul Horn. Since I'm kind of an old guy, I kind of remember Paul Horn. Not real old, but old enough to be very, you know, I was, even before I talked to him or really ever had a chance to meet him, I was listening to his records in college back in the early 70s.
In his jazz format?
Both.
In both. So you were with him
through
his transition.
If you go to his website, Paul Horn, even though he's retired, someone else runs it for him, you'll see an amazing amount of jazz recordings. So everybody thinks he's just kind of like, oh, he was a flute guy in the Taj Mahal. He was just kind of a new agey flute guy. No, actually, he's a real serious jazz improviser, composer that came up and played with some of the best. He was actually friends with Miles Davis and a lot of great jazz musicians. So Paul Horn is a very interesting study. And he has a book, too, called Inside that was written 10, 15 years ago. That it's a pretty interesting book to read just about the transformation of the various things he did in his life. So, see, I'm kind of lucky to know about all these people, you see?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, there you go. It's very inspiring for me to talk about these people.
Well,
not many people talk about them anymore.
Well, they're the greats among us. You know, I am a very passionate advocate for loving and listening to the stories of our elders and our culture. You kind of have to turn against the culture to really get that, because it seems, you know, in the media and all that, you know, the young face and all that, and after you're young, you're useless. And, you know, our elders, and my mom and other people I know, you know, they struggle with gray hair. To me, I feel like our elders are our greatest gift. They are the stories walking of how humans exist on this planet. Their stories tell us how we can be better people.
There you have it. I guess I'm someone that carries the elder world flute artists that have been on the planet and doing music for the last 50 years. And in a way, like in my concerts, I share a glimpse of these different disciplines and talk about these people and then play little examples of the kind of music they used to play. See? That's kind of my thing.
Are you working with kids now, or is this on your journey? Lucky person that finds you is going to have this opportunity.
No, I've seen thousands of kids doing, telling stories about American Indian flute songs and some of the things we've been talking about today. And the real reality is once you get yourself the whole entertainment and showbiz and drawing attention to yourself, once that finally becomes not important, you start to look at the things that are important. And wouldn't it be great if I could inspire some young flute players and turn them on to all these recordings and people I know, and maybe in a way it'll inspire them to keep playing. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm a mentor of sorts, other than sitting here and telling you I'm the great jazz, Cuban, Zen, Indian flute guy. Yeah, I've been, you know, I'm a mentor of
seems you're aging well.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you know, when you can laugh at yourself a little bit and just really realize that, you know, artists are, you know, they're difficult people to be around because a lot of issues, you know, it's just someone like me that was a band leader for a long time. You know, I'm used to babysitting musicians, and that's a tough job after a while. You really got to have a lot of fortitude to kind of, you know, crisscross places with a unique collection of souls. To be honest with you, my stories and my flutes and just myself, or maybe a world percussionist, I'm pretty comfortable just not being the guy that has to worry and take care of everything. I really enjoy, and flutes lend themselves to that, because, see, if I was a tuba player, it might be tough to get up there and crisscross the Cuban, jazz, Zen, Indian globe with a tuba. See, I have a different flute for every song and every story. See, that's what's kind of unique about my solo presentations, is I never play the same flute twice in one evening.
Wow. I noticed in reading the liner notes, there are so many flutes. There's woodpecker flutes and cedar flutes and loon flutes. And not only that, you're gifted with bird calls.
I've over the years, I've collected various little clay aerophones and things from Brazil, and I have a way of making them sound like birds, just tooting on them. I have a way of just making unique sounds on little tiny instruments. And that's what the kids, you know, they really pick up on that, because, you know, they kind of look at you and go, are you from another planet? I said, oh, no, I'm just, well, how do you do, why does that sound like that? Oh, because I'm just doing this with it. And, you know, so, you know, it's not a big mystery. It's just I have an ability to make a lot of different sounds on a lot of different things.
You do a really good hawk imitation, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm a windy kind of guy, you know?
A windy kind of guy. All right.
You know, I don't really play. My best music, really, in some ways, is non-Western instruments. I love the silver flutes, but there's a unique relationship with my wooden flutes and the bamboo flutes I have. They're just they can kind of sound like the land a little bit. They have voices in them that evoke memories of maybe days gone by, without getting too dreamlike here on you. You know, days gone by, flutes gone by. A lot of elders always come to me and say, oh, I love the sound of that. It really reminds me of my relatives and days gone by. Thank you for playing. You know, because the songs are not fast-paced. A lot of the stuff I do, right, it's in a meditative type. There's a pulse to it, but it just has a connection, I think, with elders really enjoy my flute things that I use. Elders and kids. Some of the folks in the middle do, too, but remember, the young, you know, people in their 20s and 30s, people are moving fast, like you said. You know, you have to kind of slow down a little bit to listen to Oru, or to listen to Remembering the Songs, or listen to Paul Horn. You can't just kind of put it on in the background and get what's going on.
Absolutely not. And what great medicine for our times to actually have an inspiration to slow down a little bit, you know, to just actually take that journey.
Well, that's part of what I'm trying to do with the music is, how do you, you know, where are the possibilities in silence, and where do you leave space in the music, and that's a real hard thing to achieve, leaving space in the music. Warren's a master at leaving space. So was the great Miles Davis. They were masters at leaving space in between notes, and that really created that mystery in their sound. Other than being such iconic artists that played so beautiful, you know, I mean, if everyone could be Paul Horn or Miles Davis, well, then we'd have a whole bunch of them all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of only one Paul Horn, and there's only one Miles Davis. There's not a whole collection of Paul Horns out there.
Well, there needs to be Gary Stratsos and, you know, David Lawns, and I mean...
There you go. Well, there is only one David Lawns, and there is only one Gary Stratsos.
That's for sure. So we don't need more than one Paul Horn because we have Gary Stratsos.
Well, okay, if you say so, there we have it. Well, you know, it doesn't come without the hard work, and that's the part that I have to impress upon the young people about the time spent. The time spent.
Right. And
there's no mystery to the hard work it takes. You know, people say, oh, it sounds so Indian. Why does that sound like an Indian flute? Well, because I listened to the vocal rendition, and then I've worked really hard at trying to capture the spirit of that vocal rendition, and I have a really unique collection of traditional Indian flutes, for example, that can help execute that song.
And, you know, that is exactly what I think it requires at this point to pierce that busyness, because I think we've kind of lost track of those steps, you know?
Yes, we have. Well, you got to remember something. The technology today and the way that music is being put together with the modern Pro Tools, what you can do to alter the organicness of the music, you know, I still, so you know, most of the stuff I sent you, all that music, my dear, is one take and one experience without a lot of studio editing and punching things in and doing it over five or six times. Everything you have in that collection I sent you was a one-shot deal.
That's extraordinary.
That L.A. Gua that you just played,
mm-hmm.
One shot, with the drummers playing with me live, not overdubbed, all live, like the way jazz musicians make records. It's called playing together on the spot. And the problem now is you can send tracks around right on files and, well, can you overdub this and overdub that, and we'd like to try this, and then all of a sudden you get this really slick, overproduced, perfectly tuned recording, and what do you miss? You miss that. You miss some of the mistakes. You miss the inventiveness. See, all that stuff from Paul Horn and the Taj Mahal and the Great Pyramid and the Russian cathedrals, guess what? One shot on the record. Done. See?
Well, and I also think that you miss the soul.
Thank you.
You miss the soul. That is the life force of it.
Thank you.
That's what I miss. That's what I miss with all these canned recordings. And
well, because, if the technology is available and people know how to use it, they're going to use it. But where was that technology in 1968 when Paul Horn turned on a tape deck inside the Taj Mahal and whipped out an alto flute and said, "Here we go."
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what he had to work with, and he made it work.
Well, that's all he had to work with.
And
no studio enhancement when he brought it back from India to Los Angeles.
That is true musicianship.
Yeah, that record I sent you, Oasis, all solo flute, one take, two sessions, boom, 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 done.
And it's so beautiful. It's so haunting. The sounds on this CD are so haunting. Shall we treat our listeners to a track from it?
Well, I'll see. Go ahead. We'll see what you got. I'm just sitting here just having a nice chat with you, and whatever you pick, we'll see what you pick.
Okay, well, we're going to listen to track number 2, The Empty Sky.
Oh, The Empty Sky. Okay.
Yeah, I really like this one. It really sets, I found, for me, it kind of sets the tone in a sort of summary way. But this whole disc is a ride of its own. The sounds of each of these discs are totally unique. You've done a very good job of creating an atmosphere of each one. They each have their own integrity and their own feel. And it's not just the same flute. Oh, there's that Gary flute again. It's not like that at all. Every single CD has its own integrity, its own sound, its own mission.
Well, that's part of the process and what we're trying to achieve. And I forgot because I have too many flutes and too many songs and too many records. That what flute am I playing on Empty Sky?
Let's see. It doesn't specify.
Oh, I know what it is. I think it's the first time I ever recorded a curved silver huge bass flute, concert bass flute, and that's an improvisational piece on a curved bass flute. So I guess you can fire it up if you want.
All right. Okay, so now we will play the song from the CD Oasis, track number 2, Empty Sky.
Thank you.
journeying here with Gary Strautzos on the Alchemy of Light broadcast. Hello, Gary. You know what? It has, our time is quickly gone.
I know, it went by in like 5 seconds. Real quick, it wasn't a concert bass flute. That is an ancient copy of a Puebloan Southwest Rim flute that was found in these ruins in the Southwest Desert in the 1930s. So no, that wasn't a concert flute. That was an ancient Puebloan Rim flute.
What is Rim flute?
That's a rim flute. The loon flute is just a flute I have with a bird head carved on the end, that, like a loon. If you look on my website, you can see pictures of some of my different flutes and stuff.
Uh-huh. So the rim flute is actually a rim? Where's
the
rim?
Yeah, it's just got a short, it's just a tube with a little slant on it, like almost a South American cana, but they were rim flutes from the Southwest Kiva. They're very, very mysterious instruments.
Hence that amazing sound.
Yeah, well, they've never been recorded because they were dated back to 1050 AD, so how would anybody know what they sounded like? So that's a real, I call that that's a real spooky flute. Okay, then, so we're all done, it looks like. I want to thank you and thank Lydia Sherwood for setting this up, and I'll leave you with the final comments, but I really appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's been such a pleasure. And please do leave us with the final comments, and if the listeners would like, we can, after all the final comments, we'll let one song just carry us into the next. So
okay,
please.
Well, thank you, and make sure and I get your address again. I think I have it. I'll check, and I'll send you some gifts. And again, hello, Boston. And being a Vermonter, I know all about Boston. So maybe I'll make my way to Boston again. It's been a while since I've been back there to play, so we'll see what we can do about that.
Sounds great, mate. Sounds great. Well, it's been quite a pleasure, and thank you very much, and thank you to PBS and to Lydia as well, and to David, and for this little magic that brought you both to the Alchemy of Light broadcast and brought us music. And
much appreciated.
Likewise. So anybody would like to know more about Gary Strautzos, please visit his website, GaryStrautzos. That's GaryStrautzos.com. You'll find links to all of his recordings, so much more than we even barely touched today. He is truly a humble master of his flute, and really worth exploring for the education and the just peace of mind of his extraordinary talent. So we will wrap this broadcast up with one last track. I will not be coming back, but this is for all of the listeners who just want to take a little more of that piece that he has to offer. This track is from his CD called Within You, Without You, and it's track number 6, Journey into Stillness. So thank you all for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other. Bye-bye.
Hey, bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.